to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, a queer, political, comedian, self-proclaimed, sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority, where we tackle pop culture, the news, media, and history, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout. Let's get political, political. We're gonna get political. Let's get political. All right, so we just recently had the first part of the impeachment hearings. They were held by the House Intelligence Committee, and it was a lot of important information that is really setting the groundwork for moving forward. And what exactly is all the brouhaha? What's going on? There's like so much stuff. So we have brought in today Ben Randall, who I have dubbed our, he's back in the podcast. I've dubbed him our resident political analysis scientist. I think that's a real title. Well, is here at Minority Corner. He's here to help us break it all down, key points and takeaways. The holidays are coming up and you might need some talking points. And also, just to be an educated citizen of the United States, it's just really important for us all to be on the same page and aware of the facts of what's happening and why it's so important. Especially since it seems to just be a Republican strategy to just create a lot of disinformation and distrust. And ultimately just a shit ton of confusion. So the confusion stops here. But first, since Ben is here, he's also our resident Madonna expert, and I want his take on her latest concert. What is also the proper phone filming documentation etiquette at a concert? Also, 10,000 hours. Is it really a thing to become an expert? I'm reading Malcolm Gladwell's book called Outliers, which talks about it. And also, I seem to be Stella getting her groove back. I'm taking painting classes. What? Most importantly, by the end of the episode, you will have a clear grasp on all things impeachment. So let's learn, laugh, and play right here on Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Ben Randall's back here at Minority Corner. Welcome back, Ben.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, I mean, we had to bring you in. I have dubbed you the official Minority Corner political analysis scientist.
Scientist. I don't know about that, but I mean,
I think it needed another like button at the end.
I am a just add water politics.
Gabber.
That is true.
That's why we have you here. But first, before we get into all that, we have a little fun. First of all, I commend you. You went through the snow to get here.
I did. It's our first snow of the year. The season, I should say. I vastly prefer snow over rain. There's like no question for me.
It just bounces off of you.
Yeah. And you can bundle up for it. You don't get that wet.
Yeah.
You don't have an umbrella, both your hands.
Yeah.
It's, you know, rain I find just debilitating. You can't do anything if it's raining. But if it's snowing.
You're soggy and you're just heavy.
I don't know. It's fine.
And there's something, like, you were talking about this earlier, something whimsical about a snow.
Yes.
It's just, there's a bit of whimsy. And that maybe also because we're from California.
Yes.
And so it's
yes.
still kind of fresh and new yes. to us. And, like, people on the East Coast are like, motherfucker.
Yes. And we're not driving. Driving it would be very, very different.
Yeah, we're just like, let me yes. get to the train.
Yes. And we're not like, I don't know, I wasn't going to work. I was just coming to talk with you.
Yes, us in the inn, and to give your 2 cents and to help us get through this yes. impeachment shenanigans. Oh, also too, we were talking about this earlier. One thing about with the snow is that like, if you're late, it's like understanding.
Yes.
Everyone's like, you made it.
Yes, especially the first couple of snows.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, ooh, it's snowing out there.
But once you get into, like, February snow, it's uh-huh. like, bitch, you had 3 months to prepare.
Exactly. Everyone's equally annoyed by it as well, so.
Just, oh, man, just counting down the days. So I'm in the middle of a media deprivation right now. I'm on week 5 of The Artist Way.
Love it.
I literally feel like I'm Stella. She's getting her groove back.
Your 42-year-old divorcee. Oh,
God, yeah, I showed Ben, so I'm doing The Artist Way, and I have to do, like, an artist date each week, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to make sure that, like, every week is a different, like, last time I did The Artist Way, it was a lot of movie dates, mm. a lot of going to the movies, and it's, I watch movies all the time,
yeah.
so it wasn't challenging. I let Harriet be, like, the first one, and the Ooh. Only good little movie date,
because
that helped me get over my broken heart. I was like, okay, I can go She had her heart broken and then went to go free some slaves.
Correct.
Like, I can get over this. Like, get off the couch, boy, go wash your face. and then I painted a painting. Like,
I love it. It's sitting behind us right now. It's beautiful. Cherry blossoms.
Oh my God. I won't show you what the instructor painted, but you know, even he said, your painting's not going to look like mine.
So. Was it really detailed and elaborate and beautiful and like all those things?
Yeah, it was. Mine is my own style. I will say though, like, it's supposed to be like, it's a very introductory, it's a BYOB, like wine and beer drinking.
Yeah.
I currently use it on a sober Love November, it. So I just was there painting.
Sipping your water.
Sipping my water. The ladies next to me were so stressed out. They're just like, Susan, I'm so stressed. I'm like, ladies, this is the most unstressful thing I've
ever done. Even with their Chardonnay?
Even with. I think it made it worse. And like the instructor, it's the day after Thanksgiving. I think the instructor like did not want to be there. Yeah, he was British. I don't know. But he just didn't want to be there. And he was like,
he was British. So they always come act like that, I guess.
Maybe that's what it was. He was like, listen, we're gonna paint this painting. Yours isn't gonna look like mine. Mine's not gonna look like the one that we're supposed to be painting. Let's just drink some. You can listen to me, you can not listen to me, it doesn't matter. You can just sit there and drink wine, whatever. And then we started painting. And like for me, like stress for me is like about to go do a stand-up show or like an audition. And I was like, oh my God, this is great. I'm just sitting here. He's like, it can be wrong. There's no mistakes. I'm like, there's no mistakes. This is great.
Yeah.
But isn't that always the case?
There are never mistakes.
There are never mistakes. So go take a painting class.
I love it. I've actually always wanted to do that. Though for me, I drew a lot when I was a child. Mm. And I'm a pretty good visual artist. I don't do it anymore. Yeah. So the muscle memory really isn't there. But it would probably be stressful for me because I'd want to, you know, it's like being a former athlete or something and you wouldn't want to play the game and suck.
Yeah.
So I think probably for me, my ego would get involved in all that stuff, which is a shame because it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh my God, it is. I think I want to try to take that energy into like anything I do. It's like me in bowling. Bowling's not fun for me because I was on a competitive bowling league when I was 12. So it's stressful.
I just really suck at it.
Yeah, I mean,
really suck at it.
Well, just practice 10,000 hours.
Oof.
You gotta just get those 10,000 hours in.
I feel like that's a shoulder injury up in there.
There will be a few of those. Yeah, I'm reading Malcolm Gladwell's book. What is it called? It's riveting. Forgot the name of it. The one about how do we measure success? Outliers. Oh. It's a book called Outliers, and it's fascinating to me. Because it literally does. I read a lot of stuff. We all know I read a lot of self-help.
Yeah.
Woo-woo.
Woo-woo.
I will go to the Tony Robbins conference, walk on fire. Oprah, sign me up. But there's a book. Like I came across it from Michael B. Jordan was getting interviewed by Oprah.
Mm.
And he was like, this is my favorite book. I'm like, bye. Hadn't read it for a year. But it's about how we measure success and what is success. And like Malcolm Gladwell just does this huge investigation onto like what all the successful people do.
Yeah.
And you know, we've all heard like 10,000 hours, 10,000 hours. I'm like, okay, yeah, cute. But he literally has gone through every single like medium or career path or anything. And the magic number is it takes 10,000 hours to be a master or to get really solid, really good at anything.
Has someone broken that down though? Like how many hours per week, per years? What is that?
He even did it with like, I don't remember the top of my head, but even did it with the Beatles of like how and why they got so good. Cause they were playing, they got booked at these like shitty sort of like lounge casinos somewhere like in the, either in the UK or like over in Europe. And they were playing like 7 days a week and they were just playing like time and time and time again. Mm-hmm. And they just sort of gelled and got good. And he used it for a lot of different examples and kind of just like figured, okay, even like Bill Gates who, and it's like the opportunities that they had to be able to be at the right place. Like I forget, like someone like Michigan State or whatever had like one of the early sort of computers and having access to being able to program and getting that time in. It's like literally it's just that time in. So
yeah. I love that though. I happen to believe it though. I do happen to believe it.
Right.
I even can kind of feel it in my like in my advanced age, in my 30s, that certain activities in my work when I'm directing just
come easier.
Yeah. Yeah. Some things are really stressful still, and still like I have to, you know, I get really nervous about.
Yeah.
But there are many things that I know will be. I have.
Yeah.
I have a handle on because of I put in the time.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and that's what Gladwell was saying. Like, it just, and so for me, it was like, again, boy, go wash your face and like go do some stand up or something. Cause it's like, you've got to put the time in. Like, no one's going to discover you from your room unless it's like knitting. And then, fine, put 10,000 hours into knitting.
Yes.
And he also says, like, if you put that time in, you can't help. It's going to, something's going to come about itself.
Yes.
Because if you're putting that time in, someone's going to notice, you're going to get connected to the right person or people, or you'll create your own thing where it doesn't even matter about anybody else. It's just putting that time in.
I also happen to believe that you only, we're totally diving into woo-woo, which we always
do. Hello.
You only get out what you put in.
It's true. That's what it is.
So it's, I mean, I catch myself all the time doing that kind of, that line of thought that, how am I expecting to get something out of this if I'm giving it 1 hour a week?
Yes. You got to put that energy into it.
Yep.
Also, too, what he does talk about, like what I love, he also just talks about sort of access as well. And so that's why when you have sort of underprivileged sort of neighborhoods and communities, like they're not able to get their time in. And so he's just, I'm not even halfway through the book. I'm like a third into the book. It's riveting.
That's
exciting. Highly recommend it. What I love about it is that like, he's also, so we're talking about success, but he's not trying to sell me on anything. Like at the end of the day, when I'm reading any of these self-help books, there is a swinge of like, they're trying to sell me something.
Yeah.
Malcolm Gladwell doesn't give a fuck. He's just like, listen, I investigated this topic about success. Here's what I found. Here's my findings. You know, like he's like, come to my conference. There's
exactly. Yeah. Buy the other three books.
Oh, what are your hot takes off of? I went to the Madonna concert.
Oh my God.
Did you know that's where I was going?
I didn't know that you went.
Yeah, it I forget when I went. Like I think like you went like opening.
I went opening night.
Yes,
which was I've only gone to one other Madonna opening night, the first night of the tour, and they're so exciting because no one knows anything,
right?
And especially on this show, there's no cell phones allowed in the venue, so I think you probably could go to the third or fourth, and you still wouldn't see footage or photos from it and such, but. This one, really, like, no one knew anything. And so it was such a huge question mark going into it. And there's something really...
kind of exciting about that,
I found that. Yeah, and I found that it's so rare nowadays. I so rarely walk into a room and have no idea.
Because you've seen someone posting on Instagram, you're like, oh, okay, that's what Ariana Grande is going to do halfway through the show or something, you know?
Yep. And so it's so rare to walk in and truly have no idea what it's going to be. So.
And it was a cool experience too. I mean, it was kind of, it made me realize like how much I use my phone, and hopefully you go there with someone that you want to sit next to and chat with for like 3 hours.
So true. Exactly. Cause you're going to be late.
It's going to be late. You have no phone. You can't, you know, read an article. You can't check the Instagram.
Or even just the impulse to want to document it.
To document
it. Even though I see tons of theater and I still, when I go to a concert, I still have the urge to want to take a photo. And I was like, oh, wait, I can't.
It's sort of like, you know, if I went to something and no one saw it on my Instagram, did I really go?
Exactly.
It's like a tree falling, you know? That's what it feels like. And you're like, no, I went to this thing. I have
to show. But how many times have you taken 37 videos at a concert and never watched any of them ever
again? None of them. I see that happen all the time when someone's like, especially here in New York, there'll be like some street performers. And then there'll be all these tourists who are going to film it. And I just think, you're never going to watch that video.
Never.
You're not going to send it to somebody.
And worse, you'll never delete it either. Like I have those 37 videos of Troye Sivan on here that I refuse to delete. Which, why?
But they're there just in case.
Just in
you
case,
know?
Just to prove I was there.
Oh man! If and when that cloud crashes, like there goes.
Oh my God, the cloud!
There goes our lives. Like everything we have, like all of our pictures, all of our experiences, everything. Our lives are just gone.
Yes.
Yeah.
I actually think it was kind of amazing that her concert made you put the phones into the pocket thing. And I actually think that more things should do that.
Agreed. Because like when I go to concerts and like everyone's got their phones out, I'm just seeing a sea of phones.
Yes.
And I'm also having to like watch it through someone's fucking phone.
That's the thing that was the thing that I right away was like really excited about with this concert was that I've gotten used to now seeing concerts and having to stare through a phone to see the performer because they're literally blocking the stage.
Right, yes.
And no one would hold, if I took off my hat and held it in the air, you know, for 30 minutes, you'd be like, can you put your hat down?
Excuse me, sir.
You're being rude. I'm trying not to cuss on your show. Can I cuss on your show?
Yeah, okay, fuck.
You're being
fuck.
Fucking rude.
Yeah.
Like, put that fucking hat down. So, like, we would know that, but for some reason, holding my, like, big-ass phone in the air for 30 minutes is like, that's okay, because I'm documenting it.
Yeah.
And it's like, what you're doing is blocking everyone behind you. And when there's, like, as you said, like, a sea of them, It's kind of ridiculous.
Be present, you know? Yes. And it becomes like, so I've been there. I remember when I went to see Janet, I was like, okay, I'm just going to take one video.
No,
it's, nope. Once you, it's like a Pringles can. Yep. Once you, you're going to like, well, now I need to get this dance move. And then this, oh, yep.
Exactly. Oh, this one will be better. Oh, this one will be even better. That was too short. Oh, that was too long.
She stopped singing.
Oh, she's closer to me now. It's ridiculous.
Oh, put your phones down and be present, everybody.
Yes.
We interrupt the podcast you're listening to tell you about another podcast. That's right. We Got This with Mark and Hal.
That's correct, Mark. This is Hal. We do the hard work for you, settling all of the meaningless arguments you have with your friends.
So tune in every week on the Maximum Fun Network for We Got This with Mark and Hal, and all your questions will be asked and answered.
You're welcome.
All right, that's enough of that.
We got this.
Usually I try to do like a theme song coming to this, but I don't know.
Impeachment. Dun, 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 dun. Impeachment.
So, had to bring you in, Ben, to help everybody wrap their heads around this, because I was getting my hair cut and well-meaning people there at the barbershop, but I realized that maybe not everybody pays as much close attention as maybe you and I and some other folks about like what's happening. For me, it's like, I couldn't look away. There's and it reminds me of like, you know, when Nixon was being impeached, all eyes were on the television screen. I think now there's so many different television screens. Mm-hmm. There's so much kinds of media. Like back then there was like three or four channels.
Yep.
So, and that's all that everybody watched.
They all went live with coverage. That's all you could watch.
All you could watch. But now it's like, I think I want to watch Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Like, there's time to turn away. And there was such misinformation with the guy getting my haircut. Well-meaning, but I was like, oh, not everybody is up to snuff on what's happening. And there is a lot of information out there. And so I thought you and I could dig into what are some of the highlights that happened and then talk about some of our takeaways.
Absolutely.
Well, so there were 5 days over the course of 2 weeks, and there were 12 current and former Trump administration officials who had testified. Day one.
Do you think we should preface by just explaining what is at the core allegation of it?
Yeah, Ben, kick it off.
So at the core allegation of this is that the accusation is, did Trump extort, which is just a form of bribe, a foreign government to either conduct or begin an investigation on a political rival or simply to announce that they are going to, so he can use it as political fodder in his reelection campaign.
Right.
Reminder that bribery is one of the only two listed high crimes and misdemeanors in the Constitution for impeachment.
Right. Yeah.
So that is the accusation. Did he do this?
Right. And that's what we're looking into. We're just, and I think it's what a system of checks and balances is supposed to do if there is a...
It's not a coup because the House of Representatives are voted by the people.
Right. So it's the representatives that the people have elected to investigate and look into this. Essentially just to check that there isn't an abuse of power because we don't have a king. We have a republic. We have a democracy.
And as Madison said, we do not have a king. The people are the king.
Ooh, put that on a pillow and send it to grandma. Okay, so Bill Taylor was up first. Bill Taylor, he was a top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, and George Kent, a top State Department official overseeing Ukraine policy. So we had those two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, so many people that came through are folks who... Like, I don't understand. Like, for me, I'm very political and I'm very... But everybody who came through, they're people who just serve their country.
Correct. Well,
She's kind of a George Sondland, but we'll get to him.
Well, we'll get to him in a minute. But Bill Taylor, I mean, it should be noted, has worked for the government for 50 years or has been in service for 50 years. So he was in the military, I believe, correct? And then he went to foreign service, is that right? I think Reagan, I think, Bush HW. I should have.
He served a lot of different Republican Democrats alike.
first put him into the Foreign Service.
And in fact, actually, he actually wasn't even serving. He was called upon to serve. Mm-hmm. Again, he was already done and then called upon to serve again by the Trump administration.
And I think this is something that, this is one of the legacies of certainly the Trump administration, but I will also, I think it's an extension of the, some of the GOP talking points of the last couple decades. And that is the idea that these biases that are built into, say, even the media, but certainly now it's extended all the way into government.
Yeah.
And so the Trump lackeys try to claim that based on who you voted for in the last election, that therefore every day at your job at the government, you're trying to undermine the person you did not vote for,
right,
if you did not vote for that person.
Right.
And speaking as somebody who is dating a government employee, right, who works in healthcare, that's not true.
People serve their country,
and that how that manifests is like the purpose. These supposed deep state people, right, go to the State Department, go to like my boyfriend who works in healthcare. He's trying to provide healthcare, and he's trying to help people get access to their healthcare, clean up the messes that the bureaucracy has created, and so on and so forth, day in and day out. That's his job.
Right.
Now, the certain administrations will come in with different policies, and he has to uphold that policy. Maybe he disagrees with it. He can't just, like, flout it.
Yeah.
He has to, like, that's the new policy. That's how we're dealing with those. You have to talk to this person first, and then we'll give you that. That's just how that goes. So they're just doing their jobs.
Yeah.
And it's notable that Republicans now, especially the Trump cronies, are trying to claim that because of who you supported, perhaps, or even the fact that you have still been in government so long that secretly you're trying to undermine Trump.
Right. Yeah. And some of the key things that when Taylor was testifying, so some of the few things, this is like when we're hearing, he had brought up, this is the first time that we had, about the July 26th phone call,
uh-huh,
that Trump had with Gordon Sondland, who Gordon Sondland is the U.S. ambassador to the EU, which is always just so weird that he was in Ukraine at all, because the Ukraine is, yep, not a part of the EU.
Nope. And it should be very noted, we'll get into this when we get into this, but of course, the ambassador to Ukraine was pushed out.
Yes.
And we'll get to that,
oh,
I know.
Oh, yeah, she's
but
coming
of course,
out.
Like Sondland, who was, gave $1 million to the Trump transition, was named ambassador to the EU. And suddenly he was put on Ukraine after Marie Yovanovitch was pushed out. And Bill Taylor then was brought on.
Yes, right.
Specifically for his expertise, specifically because he was so damn good at his job.
Right.
And he gets there and goes, what's going on? Because I don't think I'm getting the full story on this.
Right.
And that's basically, I think, the gist of his testimony was coming from a place of he didn't have the full story because he wasn't being told the full story.
Right, yeah. And so this is the first time that when he is, because of his closed door deposition and what, mm-hmm, came out of that, is when he mentions that someone on his staff had overheard the conversation between Trump and Sondland, and that's when we hear that Sondland told Trump that President Zelensky of, yeah, Ukraine would do anything that he wanted, and he loves your ass. And we got to hear the news say that phrase a lot. And then that person who we don't find out, it's like a surprise reveal. I mean, the story, mm-hmm, it's like, is this written by Shonda Rhimes? Like, what's happening? And Sondland also mentions that person, that Trump cares more about the investigation of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for. And Taylor essentially at this point on this day confirms that there was a quid pro quo in which Trump withheld security assistance and a White House meeting while demanding that Zelensky publicly commit to the investigation that you were talking about in the beginning. So this is the first time that we're hearing for the public, it's the first time that we're hearing someone is confirming that, yes, there was the quid pro quo.
Well, exactly. This is somebody who had, at the time, who was tasked with doing this job, was asking other people involved, wait a minute, are we now conditioning a White House meeting for a close ally on these investigations?
Right.
And then later on says, wait, are we also conditioning military aid to them?
Yes.
So again, for more context for listeners, the accusation, did he bribe or extort this country, mm-hmm, for a personal favor?
Right.
This country is at war with Russia. Russia is our adversary.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how many times Trump tries to kiss his ass,
yep,
they're our adversary, yes, and they're at war with Ukraine right now.
Yeah.
And we give Ukraine lots of military aid, because it's in our national security interest that Russia not take Ukraine,
yeah,
and annex any more of its land and take it.
Which they already did with Crimea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's in our national security interest to give the congressionally approved money to, that's the important key thing here.
Yeah, is that Congress had already approved it.
Already approved it. Trump signed that bill. So this money has to go to them by the end of the year.
Right.
And so he's withholding that, as well as withholding a White House meeting from the newly elected Ukrainian president.
Right.
Who, of course, wants this meeting so he can show, because he's nervous that Trump's kissing up to Putin makes him look weak.
Right.
With his adversary literally killing his people right now as they speak.
Right.
So he wants a meeting with Trump so he can look strong and reinforce to Russia that our allyship is strong and they are, and that the U.S. is going to stand by them. So they should consider twice before really trying to fuck with Ukraine, because the U.S. allyship is very strong still.
Absolutely.
And so that's the stakes this.
Yeah.
When we find out that he's withholding a White House meeting and he's withholding the aid for these investigations.
And everyone who comes aboard is like, well, what the fuck is going on?
What's happening? Exactly. And Bill Taylor, in contemporary time, not long after the fact, was messaging people on WhatsApp. By the way, on WhatsApp... I seem to recall a certain lady ran for president, and it was made a big brouhaha that she used a completely legal private server, which now, of course, is illegal because of the laws governing the holding on to or documenting all communications in the government. And so no one should be on WhatsApp.
No. I mean, this does just show how messy this administration is.
Criminal, I think, is the word you mean.
There it is. Yeah. And just you have people who are in place who... The breach of security is frightening, especially when we get to Sondland and just where he was having his conversation.
Yes.
And
yes.
But we'll get to that.
Yep.
Last thing about the first day of the impeachment trial, Kent Blue, who also testified on that day, blew a hole through all of Trump's talking points because he said that there was no factual basis to support allegations of Ukrainian election interference or that the Bidens engaged in any wrongdoing. And I do want to point out about... the whole entire myth that's been thrown out that Ukraine is the one that actually interfered with the elections. And again, the whole entire purpose, well, first of all, the Intelligence Committee has come out and reported to all of the senators that this is something straight out of the Kremlin.
Yes.
This is a talking point straight out of the Kremlin.
The Republican-controlled Senate Intelligence Committee did a 3-year investigation on this topic and also concluded... it was Russia.
Yeah.
It came from the top. It came from Putin. It was trying to help Trump and trying to hurt Hillary.
Yeah.
This is case closed.
Yeah.
So the fact that we have this 3 years later, conveniently now that he's being impeached, we're all of a sudden, we're trying to push this conspiracy theory that Ukraine actually framed Russia and that they actually have this physical DNC server, which, by the way... it's a cloud.
Right.
It wasn't a physical server.
Yeah.
So when Trump says they have the server, where is the server? Not only is this a lie and factually inaccurate, it's a lie designed to confuse people.
Yes.
And designed to make people think there was an actual physical server. And where is it?
Right. No. There were it's in my little laptop. I just have a little server that I'm carrying around with all the secret codes and everything in it. No. And it then puts doubt and confusion to people's minds. Mm-hmm. So stopping that mess there. Day two, here comes Maria Ivanovich. Mm-hmm. Bless her.
Great, great witness.
So Maria Ivanovich, she was the ousted U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. She was pretty much taking aim at Trump and Giuliani and said that they carried out a smear campaign to get her out of there because she refused to essentially do their bidding.
I mean, what's the first thing you do if you want to you go in mom's room and mom's not around and steal from her purse is get the babysitter out.
Yeah,
take down the babysitter.
Yep. Someone who, for one, she's good at her job. She knows what she's doing, and she's not just going to again. Giuliani is. Why is he even there? If he's the president's personal lawyer. Why is he even there?
Well, and that's a really important thing to also keep your eye on, because as recently as a couple of days ago, Trump is now saying, trying to back away and say he didn't instruct Giuliani to do anything there. And he wasn't sure. You have to talk to Giuliani about what he was doing over there. But Giuliani has said, and this is really fascinating, it's in Giuliani's legal best interest to stay with what he's been saying this whole time, which was that he was in Ukraine because he's personally representing the personal interests of his client, Trump.
Right.
So if that is the case, what the hell is his personal lawyer doing trying to get personal business to help his client, what does that have to do with the official business of the U.S. government?
Right, yeah.
Who is Giuliani working for? The U.S. people as an emissary of the president? Mm. Or Trump, his personal client?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, Giuliani is stuck with that latter one because legally then he can have attorney-client privilege and not have it be looked into until they prove it was a crime.
Right.
And then, of course, that falls apart.
Well, but even though like now they're trying to spin that, I think Trump had said, Giuliani has other clients. No, rewind, because like about a year ago, Giuliani was like, Trump is my only client.
Yes.
Again, it's all on tape because y'all love to go on like Fox News and say everything. So it's like we can rewind the tape and tell. It's like funny. They just like always backtrack of like they move the goalposts.
Well, also, it's important to mention through all of this is that there is no coherent defense of any of this. The White House has none. The GOP doesn't have one. In fact, the only one that you could kind of put forward that they're not even arguing, which is that you could say this is wrong and he should never do this again, but he should not be removed for it.
Right.
But no one's actually making that claim.
But that's what the goalpost kept being moved because at first it was like there was no quid pro quo.
This never happened. It's all secondhand. Whistleblower. Let's just try to out them so we can denigrate their name and make it he said, he said.
Yeah.
Instead, it's all been corroborated. Yep. Exactly.
Now that it's all out there. Uh-huh. Yovanovitch was shocked that all of this had happened. She was devastated by what Trump had said about her in a July 25th call to Ukraine president. On the call, in addition to pressuring Zelensky to investigate the Bidens in the 2016 election, Trump mentioned Yovanovitch and said that she was bad news, adding that she's going to go through some things. And then Yovanovitch said a person who saw her reading the memo of the call said the color had drained from my face. I think I even had a physical reaction. Even now, words fail me. Like, it's devastating to watch her about what happened to her. Again, someone who just cares. She cares about Ukraine.
She cares about an expert.
She cares about the U.S. She cares about, you know, her job being there and trying to negotiate peace. And again, like you said, we are at war with Russia. Like, her job is so important in having people there on the front lines.
Yes. And it's also worth noting, there's more backstory, is that Ukraine has had issues for years of corruption.
Yeah.
And so that is the thing that they tried to hide behind, is that Trump was trying to push these investigations of Biden's son, Hunter, working on the board of this Ukrainian company. And that was an example of corruption, et cetera, et cetera. But the allegation that Biden, as he was as vice president under Obama, that he ordered the firing of the prosecutor at the time, widely seen globally as standing in the way of prosecuting corruption.
Yeah, the guy was corrupt as fuck.
Exactly. And Marie Yovanovitch knows all this. She knows the whole backstory. She also knows that if they were interested in truly doing these kind of investigations, there's channels for all of this.
Yeah.
And that she'd be looped into all of this.
Right.
And instead you have Giuliani and his henchmen.
Right. The three amigos who were there.
Exactly. Trying to do business in Ukraine. And as she pointed out in her testimony too, she was saying, if they're trying to do business here, that's her job.
Yeah.
Is to help them get business in Ukraine. Unless, of course,
it's shady as fuck.
Exactly.
Because, again, the babysitter's there, and y'all are, like, you know, trying to do some shady ass stuff.
Yeah, you're like, well, I think my friend Bobby can just babysit us. We don't need that babysitter anymore. I'm going to bring my friend Bobby.
Also to point out, during Yovanovitch's testimony, Trump decides to tweet at her.
Yes.
And sort of intimidate her. Which,
I mean, this is classic witness intimidation.
Yes, this is like
if I go rob a bodega right now and you witness me, James, and when you are testifying that day, I say on Twitter, denigrating material, try to intimidate you and try to use whatever I can to publicly shame you into not testifying or to punish you for testifying, I would be arrested and charged with witness intimidation.
Yeah.
It's a crime.
And I feel like it has, I mean, it should be another, when they draft the articles of impeachment, it should absolutely be another charge.
It will. And it's also wild because we're going to get to the land of course, when they vote they'll be voting on each article of impeachment.
Right.
And it's like, on what planet would is that innocent? Is he innocent? And when he did it, it's on paper. We see it.
And that's something else to mention, that this is just the first stage of the sort of House impeachment process, that through this now what will happen is they'll go back and then draft what they feel are the articles of impeachment, and then they'll vote on that.
Yes.
Day three. So on this day, Tuesday, November 19th, we had four, it was a busy day. There was four witnesses who testified. You have Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who's the top Ukraine expert on National Security Council. Jennifer Williams, a foreign service aide detailed to Vice President Mike Pence. Tim Morrison, the NSC's former official in charge of overseeing Russia and Europe policy. And then Kurt Volker, the U.S.'s former special representative to Ukraine. Again, all folks who just serve their country.
Mm-hmm.
So both Vindman and Williams directly listened.
So there's the July 26th phone call. Reminder, the day after Mueller testifies for Congress.
Yes.
The day after that supposedly... The testimony that supposedly everyone felt was a non-starter, and they felt like he kind of flopped and he did not declare that Trump committed crimes.
Right.
The day after Mueller testifies, Trump has a call with Zelensky. We have a summary, not transcript,
right,
of this call. And on this call, the one that Trump now claims, keep looking at the transcript, look at the transcript, when it's not a transcript.
It's
also incredibly damning.
Yeah.
Because they discuss security issues, and then he says, I'd like you to do us a favor, though.
Yeah. And there's a lot of dot, dot, dots, which Sonny Houston on The View always points out that dot, dot, dots always mean that there's something else that is being said that just wasn't recorded there.
Yes. But I'd like you to do us a favor, though. Sounds conditional.
Oh, my God, yeah. You watch any mob movie, I know what that means.
Yeah, or if I just say, I want to borrow a cup of sugar from you, or hey, can I borrow your lawnmower, James? And you go, I'd like you to do me a favor, though.
That means...
What does that mean?
Yeah.
But can I say no to your favor and still get the lawnmower? Well,
it's a risk.
You didn't say it.
Yeah, it's a bit of...
But it was pretty clear.
And you might not get the thing that you asked for.
Precisely.
That lawnmower, because they need to do me this favor.
Precisely.
So they had... So then, yes, going back to the July 25th phone call. So they're on the call with the one that has the transcript.
Yes, the official call to the Ukrainian president.
And not the transcript, but we'll call it a memo or just some notes.
Yes.
Some notes,
but
of the phone call.
They were the original whistleblower was commenting on this, the summary of the call.
Yes.
They were on the call.
Yes. And that's what kind of kicked off this whole entire thing, is that the whistleblower had witnessed all this and had said, hey, here's what there's some just calling attention to what's going on.
Did a whistle blow?
Yeah.
Blew the whistle.
Yeah. I want to play that song. Blow the whistle. Do, 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 do.
I don't know that.
That's like the whistleblower theme song. Blow the whistle. Oh,
I don't know that.
Homework. Blow the whistle. Do, 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 do.
By the way, that's what you're going to play going into this clip.
Absolutely. So Vindman and Williams, they both said that they found the phone call unusual and inappropriate, and that their testimony directly undercuts what Trump was saying, how the phone call was perfect, because it wasn't. It was unusual. It was inappropriate. And then Vindman, who's a Purple Heart recipient, whose family fled the Soviet Union and arrived in the U.S. When he was a toddler, he had been accused by the Republicans about his loyalty, which is really frustrating, because it's like, right now I'm like, what is the Republican Party? I thought that they were so pro, like, people who served, our veterans.
Correct.
And it seems like if you don't toe the line of whatever the president says, you're a traitor. That's a dictatorship, y'all.
Correct.
Do we understand what the whole entire point of our American democracy is, that you can speak out against the president or those who are in charge, or if you think that there's wrongdoing, you can call attention
and
to
that, it. And I think that one of the most moving quotes, and they certainly will highlight this for decades from now, is when he testified and he spoke to his father from the room and said, you know, Dad, you were paraphrasing here, you know, you were right to come here all those years ago, and don't worry, I'm going to be all right for telling the truth.
Yes.
I will be okay.
Yeah. And I think it's
I just got chills. That's so powerful. And such, as you said, just a reminder of the values of being an American.
Yeah.
That it's not about towing the party line.
Nope.
It's not about dear leader. It's about the truth.
Yep.
And it's about serving your country.
Yep.
Over one man.
Yes, absolutely. Country over any sort of party or person loyalties or anything. And Steve Castor, the minority counsel, he tried to accuse Vindman of, because he was apparently like offered the position of defense minister at Ukraine, and Vindman quickly turned that down of like, you know, and also read like they were trying to like, he read what his final, his reviews were from his commanding officers. Like they were trying to attack his character, which is really, it hurts my heart. Mm-hmm. And I don't even recognize like what's going on in this country when we're attacking those who have served our country, and I don't even recognize Republican
And also,
Party.
Reminder, there's no defense. Reminder, we still have not heard the defense.
Yeah, what is the defense?
Did he not do this? Did he not say these words? Did he not, have a quid pro quo? Is he not guilty? Or is it simply a matter of denigrating everybody who says something to prove that he did?
Yeah.
All these fact witnesses.
So Volker dramatically altered, apparently, his testimony from what he told Congress behind closed doors. When he first testified, he categorically denied that any investigation into Joe Biden and the Burisma holdings or the 2016 election were raised during a July 10th White House meeting with Ukraine officials. And then Volker acknowledged that Gordon Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the EU, brought up the investigations and that he had found it inappropriate.
Which was, there was a lot of brouhaha, you know, one of the many Republican shifting arguments was that, oh, the initial fact-finding deposition should not be private. These all be in the public and they're trying to hide things from us and Schiff is shifty and all that nonsense. And it was nonsense because, of course, you have a grand jury style testimonies, yeah, or depositions because you don't want people to coordinate their stories.
Absolutely.
And so this is exactly what happened. He, when he got reports of what other people said, he quickly revised his testimony.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. And again, like everything that's happening is just the way that the process is done.
Yep.
And like, you know, when the Republicans tried to do that whole entire stage thing where they went down and demanded to be in on the hearings, it's, yes, like some of you actually were already supposed to be in that, yes, meeting for one. And two, it's supposed to be closed door, top secret. And you're bringing camera crews and journalists, correct, down there making a funk. One of those Republican Congress people, I guess, were also filming a documentary, who was the one that was leading the charge.
Of course he was.
Camera optics, lights, camera action. Last thing on that day, Volker and Morrison, who were both on the GOP witness list, ended up giving testimony that hurt the Republicans' case because Morrison expressed disappointment with Trump's July 25th call. Volker acknowledged a link between Trump's mentions of Burisma and how that was really code for Biden. So,
and those were, by the way, Republican witnesses, right?
Yes.
Those two were ones that the Republicans had called forth because they felt in the previous testimony and depositions that they had said it wasn't a quid pro quo and that et cetera, et cetera. And they proved to be very damning.
Very
again,
damning.
No, there's witnesses no- come forward and said this did not happen. Not one witness has said that's not true.
And again, the Democrats have a very challenge ahead of themselves because everyone that they have called who was, because they were like, oh, there's a lot of people who hearsay, yada, and we're going to get to some people who were actually like there, mm-hmm, on, like, so it's like the second phone call. Everyone's been not coming up to, I forget what is it called when they don't show up? They're subpoenas. They've been not coming up.
Well, that's the important point. And that's the thing. I even read an article today saying something to that effect, talking about smoking guns. But let's remember, Chief of Staff Mulvaney, Secretary of State Pompeo, Vice President Pence, perhaps even Giuliani, these are all people who should be testifying and are, not to mention their aides and such, yeah, are all defying subpoenas.
Yeah.
And
the
State Department is holding on to thousands of pages of documents.
We're very happy to announce that tickets for MaxCon 2020 will go on sale Friday, November 29th.
One of those ones was referencing that they do have notes of some of these calls and meetings.
I also
want to
let you
know, the State Department has
them, right?
And they're sitting on them and they're not turning them over because they know that if the House were to take them to court to try to enforce these subpoenas, it's a question of whether or not they would win because we've never had the House and the
In the meantime, if you want to join us at the last Max Fun Con in Lake Arrowhead, June 12th through the 14th, you can find details at MaxFunCon.com.
But most importantly, it would take too long. And so the White House basically knows that, right, and so just defying,
just trying to run
and
out
so
the
precisely.
Clock.
So we don't have the main actors testifying because they're not testifying. Which once again, if he was innocent,
yeah. If you have nothing to hide, why wouldn't you? I mean, that looks guilty as fuck, yep, to me.
If those thousands of pages of documents prove that nothing happened, hand them over.
Yeah. So day four, Wednesday, November 20th, this is a big day because you get Laura Cooper, who testified that her staff received multiple inquiries showing Ukraine felt pressured by Trump. And then Gordon Sondland indicated it is a big day. Gordon Sondland, who was the EU ambassador, again, he gave millions of dollars to Trump. He testifies on this day, and he changes his testimony. Again, his behind closed doors testimony, because everybody had said, here's what really happened. And then suddenly his story changes. And he's supposed to be like the Republican sort of star boy who's going to like shut it all down. And he implicates everybody. He implicates Trump, Mike Pompeo, Pence.
He said everyone was in the loop.
Yep.
Everyone knew this was the plan. Everyone was in the loop.
Yep. Yeah. And then Laura Cooper, who's the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Department of Defense, she said that her staff had received three separate inquiries from Ukraine officials in Congress, essentially being like, where's the money? What's happening? What's going on?
Which shoots down the Republican talking point that Trump was trying to push as well, saying that it couldn't have been quid pro quo because Ukraine didn't even know the money was missing. Yes, they did, and they were asking about it. So it was very clear what was being withheld in that extortion scheme.
Yep. Yep. So, I mean, that was and then it's just interesting too. Also, like how quickly like Fox News had turned on Sondland. You know, they were like, oh, he was so smug. You can't trust anything that he's saying. Also interesting too, because it was such a long day and there was so much information that Sondland was giving that they were going to break. And Sondland was like, I have a plane to catch. He was so upset. Like, he's like, I have a plane to catch. Like, fucking billionaire guy. This is a big ass deal. You sit your ass down and you keep.
He's in the hospitality industry.
He was like, I said my spiel. Can I go? And then Hale testified that Trump and the Office of OMB, Office of Management and Budget, which has not been helpful at all and has so many documents and things that would be so helpful for this whole entire case. So OMB, he testified that OMB, which ordered the aid freeze at Trump's directive, were at odds with every other federal agency on the decision. He also vehemently defended Yovanovitch against Trump and Giuliani.
Yes, because again, like the Pentagon, everyone was wondering why this aid was being withheld, and there was no explanation given.
Yeah.
After the fact, when they were caught in early September, they were giving the excuse of corruption.
Right. Yes.
Was the excuse they gave in September when they were caught. And then quickly, I think it was September 12th, they released the aid. But through the summer, people at the Pentagon and other agencies were trying to figure out what was going on. Two people at OMB quit, resigned in protest over this.
Yes.
Because no one knew why this congressionally approved military aid to a country currently beating back one of our adversaries was being withheld.
Yeah. Yes.
Mysteriously.
That's weird. Why would that be?
Also, one more on that note, it's worth pointing out that if indeed Trump was interested in fighting corruption, even if he was so interested in this issue with the Biden or Hunter Biden and Burisma, the energy company in Ukraine he served on the board of, if he was so concerned about that, why did we release military aid in 17, in 18? What changed in 19? Besides now Hunter's father was running for president.
Yeah. Yeah,
all of a sudden, this is a very, very important topic, and they can't even get their military aid because of this investigation that has to happen.
Yeah. Great. So here's the final day. November 21st, Fiona Hill and David Holmes. David Holmes can get it.
I've been listening to him on podcasts, so I don't think I've seen it.
Oh, he can get it. So, so this is big. So they shot down conspiracies that Ukraine had interfered with the 2016 election. And they both said they were shocked about Trump's call and disappointed with Yovanovitch's ousting. So Fiona Hill, she's the National Security Council's former top Russia analyst. And David Holmes, a key State Department aide. And David Holmes was the guy who overheard the very loud conversation that Gordon Sondland was having, because everyone's like, oh, well, this is just hearsay because what Bill Taylor was saying.
So to put a point on that, in Ukraine, Gordon Sondland was at lunch drinking wine and called the president from his personal cell phone.
Already bad.
Because it's widely known that Russia has control of most of the Ukrainian cell towers.
Right. So the security breach.
So it's very likely that they listened in on that phone call.
Absolutely.
Very, very likely. Yeah. And so, hashtag butter emails.
And you also have people who are in these positions that this guy clearly just gave millions of dollars to the Trump campaign. He's in this position as the EU ambassador. Like, he's not prepared because he's doing a big security breach. And this is like, think about how many fucking breaches are happening.
And for example, so just to also put a finer point on that. The reason why such a breach matters is maybe not on this phone call did they discuss some state secret of where some bomb is kept and Russia can't know. It's not that. It means the day after this call, Putin knows what's going on in Ukraine with Trump and these investigations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now, as if we already didn't need more information of what we think Putin has on Trump, now Putin has more on Trump.
Right.
That Absolutely. Is why these breaches really matter, is because it gives foreign countries leverage, knowing that if Trump didn't do what Putin wanted, he could just tell the world that he overheard that call.
Yeah. Well, and also too, you know, going back to Sondland's testimony, like he also did corroborate. He said, like, yes, there was a quid pro quo. Mm-hmm. He came out and he said it. And not to be confused with at the end of his testimony when he said Trump had called and said, I don't want any quid pro quo. That was after, because Trump goes out and makes a big speech about.
Because Taylor had specifically WhatsApped messaged Sondland and said, are we now conditioning military aid to these investigations?
Right.
Sondland, 5 hours later, replies to him, the president says, no quid pro quo. There is no quid pro quo. He doesn't want anything. And that was after Sondland called Trump.
Right.
And supposedly Trump said that.
Right.
There's now disputes on whether that call ever happened.
But isn't from my understanding, that timeline is actually after it was already started to, people were finding out.
Yes,
about
Bill Taylor was like, wait a minute, what's going on
here? People were finding out about the quid pro quo. So now it looks like, to cover up its tracks, he's like, no, I don't want any quid pro quo. And this is like months after.
Yes.
Yes. And so, Dave Holmes, who can get it, he was listening in on.
He was at lunch with Sondland when he made that call.
Yes. And Trump was talking so loud that he could overhear.
Because Sondland was holding
things.
The phone away from his ear.
Right.
Yes.
And this is the conversation where Sondland's like, oh, yeah, he loves your ass. Talking about Zelensky, Zelensky loves your ass.
And Trump is like, so he's going to do the investigations.
Yes. And then when they got off the phone, essentially what, you know, Holmes had asked him about this, and he said that Trump only cared, like talking about, because they're there to, you know, do work with Ukraine and to protect Ukraine and support Ukraine. And, you know, Sondland had relayed to him that Trump only cares about big stuff, essentially stuff that relates back to him directly.
Because Holmes says, isn't Ukraine big?
Right.
And Sondland says, no, he means, you know, stuff that matters to him, i.e. these investigations.
Doesn't your country that you're there to be the president of matter to you? Isn't that the most bigly thing that you should be representing? And then again,
Fiona Hill.
Maria Hill is from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yeah. But Fiona Hill, amazing testimony. She's just was so badass and essentially, you know, again, shoots down any idea that Ukraine had anything to do with meddling of the 2016 election.
And even says that by saying this, the people on that very committee suggesting that are pushing Russian disinformation propaganda campaigns.
Yep.
That is a Russian talking point meant to take themselves out of culpability for the crimes they committed in 2016, which, by the way, the FBI director, Christopher Wray, has said they are still actively trying to do for 2020. So now you have Russia saying, we didn't do that in 2016. Meanwhile, we're still trying to do it in 2020. And then you have Republicans today trying to throw Ukraine under the bus and pin the blame on Ukraine, essentially providing cover for Russia to commit the same crimes in 2020.
Yep.
All to protect Trump.
Yep. Again, but like, it doesn't make any sense to me. There are people that sort of power hungry, as opposed to, like, I thought Russia was the one thing we could all rally behind in a fight against. But it's like, folks are so hungry to hold on to their own power. That's the only thing I can think of. I don't understand. I don't understand.
They're afraid of being primaried. They're afraid of that. That's, you know, that is the fundamental question. I imagine we'll get into that a little bit more with the analysis kind of portion of this and what may happen next. But At core, Republicans are afraid of being primaried and afraid of Trump attacking them on Twitter and causing them to lose a primary election because the right and the base of their party is in lockstep with Trump, even when he commits crimes.
One of my favorite quotes from Hill. She had she had told Gordon Sondland, "I think this is all going to blow up, and here we are." Yep. She called it. Like, this is literally all going to blow up, and here we are.
I'm Travis McElroy.
I'm Courtney Enlow.
I'm Brent Black, and we're the hosts of Trends Like These.
Trends Like These is an internet news show where we take the stories trending on social media and go beyond the headlines.
We'll give you the actual facts of the story and not just the knee-jerk reactions.
Plus, we end every episode with a ray of hope that we call the Wi-Fi of the week.
So join us every Friday on Maximum Fun.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trends Like These, real-life friends talking internet trends.
And now what? That's what happened. And now it happens. After the Nixon sort of impeachment hearings, mm-hmm. at first I think it was 25% of the public believed that Nixon had done anything wrong, it should be impeached. And then it changed 75% after mm-hmm. everyone had watched it. The needle has barely moved on the Republican side and the Democratic side.
That's not true. No. We are now at basically... I'm not sure the average of the polls anywhere from 50 to 53 or 5%, anywhere from that region of the country thinks that he should be removed from office.
Sure, yeah.
So that needle has moved by about 15 points.
Okay.
Now you're right that the number shifted amongst Democrats and independents who typically vote Democrat.
Right, but the Republicans not so much.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So it's Republicans who have not moved from this, but... public opinion has shifted, and a majority of the country thinks he should be removed.
You know, and I, over Friendsgiving, there were some folks who were saying that they think this whole entire thing was a mistake and it's going to hurt Democrats in 2020. I'm of the personal belief that, for one, I think no matter what, it was important. Like, Nancy Pelosi at this point, there are many a thing that, leading up to this, that we could have began an impeachment inquiry for, because mm-hmm. the man has done so many, I believe, abuses of power. But I think at this point it was the Nancy Pelosi was, her hand was forced.
Completely.
You have to uphold that we're a country of laws and constitution, and we had to uphold the constitution at some point to say, okay, the president doesn't have blanket power.
Well, also it's, I think it was two things. I completely agree with you that 2020 is a separate issue.
Yeah.
And I think that this had to have been done and has to continue to be soberly carried out. We must find out exactly what happened, and he must be impeached.
Yeah.
I think he should be removed from office. But the reason why is because bribery is one of the two crimes listed as high crimes and misdemeanors.
Yeah.
And he did not just ask Ukraine to do something for him, ask a personal favor. He used the entire might of the
U.S. government,
yeah. taxpayer dollars, the State Department, the of course, the military aid, everything. He used full diplomacy. The full might and weight of the U.S. government was leaning on this country to extort something from it so he could personally benefit.
Yep.
That is so cut and dry impeachable behavior that if we were to look the other way, not to mention, then there's another point on this. He was doing so because he was soliciting a bribe in an attempt to essentially contaminate and rig the next election by getting not an investigation
political rival. Just to get them to say put doubt and confusion into our minds. And I think that's the thing that is so frustrating to me, because it's the Trump administration, and again, this also points out of the Kremlin's playbook. This is create as much doubt and confusion as you possibly can, so no one really knows what truth is.
The truth is unknowable.
Like, no one really knows what it is, and so you know, and so then we're all in our camps and we're all, and everyone's just confused. And then no one's trusting journalists and the media or any places to get information. And again, like Putin, Putin and the Russian government, like they're trying to destroy from within. That's their playbook. They have the economy of Texas. They can't go in and infiltrate countries. Like they tried with Georgia. They couldn't. Mm-hmm. They lost. Yeah. They couldn't fight against Georgia, you know? So again, their playbook of what they do is they go from within.
Yes.
They get either back politicians who are very pro-Russia, you know, in Georgia and both in Ukraine, the candidates they backed would say things of like, lock him up. Like, I don't really trust that they're really born here. Let's check their birth certificates and those sort of things. Like, it's just, you're seeing those same sort of talking points that are happening over here. I'm bewildered that there isn't a unification. I said this earlier, that for us to be able to say, okay, Russia bad.
Correct.
I don't get it.
Well, and it's, I think the other, I want to circle back to another reason why I think this had to be undertaken, and that is because to say, oh, we're going to solve this with the election, he's trying to rig the next election. So the idea that we're going to have a free and fair election, that's already been threatened.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, correct.
That's the whole entire
basis. And if we were not to have taken, if we were not going to impeach him on this, then what would he do?
Right.
And I do believe that if he is not removed by the Senate, he will feel emboldened and he'll run around saying, I was exonerated.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, remember, he made this phone call with Zelensky the day after Mueller testified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was committing more crimes.
He was like, oop, got away with that one. Yep. Now let me see what else I can get away
Correct.
With. And also to remind, like, he was not exonerated by Mueller. Mueller had
testified 10 instances of obstruction of justice that 1,000 former federal prosecutors said he would have been indicted were he not the president.
And he would literally, from my understanding, Mueller was saying it's up to Congress to see what happens next. Like, he wasn't going to write it out and say this was... It, for him, he felt it wasn't his job to be able to do. Maybe I wish he kind of had, because...
He was not Ken Starr. He was not like...
That's the thing. Ken Starr, back with
you
Bill
should
Clinton,
impeach him, and here's the roadmap.
Right.
He was like, I've outlined 10 instances of crimes...
And it's on
make of it what you will.
Right. And again, just serving his country. And I, you know, again, just saying like, here's doing what his job was, trying not to be politically charged or anything, just doing his job.
I think they're also playing the nothing matters cynicism. And I...
Republicans?
I do fear sometimes the media falls into this. In fact, I have many conversations about this with people, and the kind of default position is, well, he's not going to be removed.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And I think that's very dangerous territory.
Absolutely. Agreed. We have to hold some sort of accountability, which is why, like, I'm not even thinking about 2020. I'm saying the sanctity for our country, we had to go through this. And let the record state that we did stand up and we said this was not okay.
Every single senator go on the record and vote.
Yes.
Every single article of impeachment.
Yep.
Did he intimidate a witness? Did he bribe?
Yep.
Did he do this? Did he obstruct justice? Did he do this? Yay or nay?
Yep. Where do you stand? Let the record show.
Yep. Cory Gardner going for re-election in Colorado. What was your vote?
Absolutely.
Let Hinkle Looper run on that. Let him be like, he thinks it's okay that the president can intimidate a witness. He thinks it's okay that the president could commit a crime in broad daylight.
Run that ad.
Run that ad.
Run it. Yeah.
I think we should be that. And that's not even a tactic for 2020, but sure. I think that that's the counter argument for when we shouldn't do this. It may hurt with suburban white people in the Rust Belt.
Whatever. Okay.
We don't have a nominee. Yeah. So hold on.
Yeah.
We don't even know who's running in this campaign.
Very
so
true.
Like,
we'll
get there when we get there. And I think certain candidates would have a harder time in the Rust Belt than others anyway.
Yeah.
So that may not be even an issue.
Yeah. I do think this whole entire process has oddly made me more patriotic and made me also appreciate what we have here in the U.S. Like, it's not a perfect country, but point to me where there is a perfect country.
Yeah,
and I do applaud that, like, this country has been able to hold together for over 250 years underneath the founding fathers wrote actually a really dope ass constitution. Like, it's been able to hold together. We've had to say, okay, when you say all men, we're actually taking that as all people and we're all having to fight our rights underneath it. But human beings, like, we want we crave freedom and equality. And what I do appreciate is that the system of checks and balances has been holding up. By the impeachment trials happening, it's a sign of checking that balance of power. Yes. And it makes me appreciative that it is happening and does exist.
Look at the crimes he's committed already. And that's the frightening thing of how emboldened he might be going forward. Mm-hmm. And I think this is worth it. I think I agree that it's also made me patriotic. And I think that it's a fight worth having. And every Republican senator should have to go on the record when they say, oh, this is a partisan impeachment. Well, don't look at the Democrats about that. Then ask Republicans, then why aren't you supporting it?
Right. Yeah,
because you would make it bipartisan. They can't make it bipartisan. Right. You've seen the evidence. Is it not true?
Yeah, that's the thing I don't understand is like that there's not even like the one. Where's like the John
McCain? There will be. The question remains, I don't believe he'll be removed because I don't think there will be 20 of them. 20 Republican senators who defect. But I think it's not impossible that this does not at least get a majority vote. Hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's impossible.
Yeah.
I think Romney probably will vote to remove.
Yeah.
Because he's Romney and he can afford it.
Sure. Yeah.
But you would still need another two or three to make that a majority. But then again, it's very possible that some of the ones that are running in states up for re-election, it's possible they do. It just depends on their own internal calculus of like do they need their base, the GOP base, to turn up for them, and so therefore they can't vote for it.
Which,
because some of the ones up for re-election maybe the ones who absolutely have to vote to acquit.
Which to me, there's two folds. It's like, for one, I mean, have town halls, poll your constituents. Mm-hmm. So you should be listening to what they have to say, and also like having real conversations with them about here are the facts, here's what happened, and polling them. It shouldn't be about maintaining your power, is what I feel.
Yeah, it is all pretty shameful, but it's interesting though, because if you go back to Nixon, the only reason he resigned was because he was probably going to eventually lose.
Right.
But there were people at the time that were making the exact same arguments in the exact same ways.
Yeah.
Remember, Nixon maintained that he did nothing wrong for decades after.
Oh, yeah. Still.
I mean, it was after he left office that he famously said, if the president does it, that means it's not a crime.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It was after he left office. So it's never, we kind of have to look back and think of it as like, now we go, oh, Nixon, bad.
Right. But at the time, it was not the case. It was very similar. We're so in the middle of it right now. We're so in the middle of the storm.
And people said the same thing about 2018. I remember this, nothing matters. He gets away with everything, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's not really a blue wave. And then there was a blue wave.
There was, absolutely.
So
huge.
I've always maintained narratives get rewritten when power shifts. Mm-hmm. So if he say, just imaginary, imagine he were to lose next November, these last couple years get seriously rewritten.
Oh, absolutely.
We would not be talking about, was it wise? Oh, was it this? Should they have done it? We'll look back and go, he was a criminal. Most likely he'll be facing indictment when he gets out of office. 100%.
And it'll look like the entire country the entire time is fighting to get him out.
That's exactly what it will look like.
Like, oh, look at the things that he did. Yes. He called Mexicans this. And it was just, oh, but you know what it was? We were duped by Russia and all these things that happened.
It'll
all
be explained.
America was fighting itself back. Well, that gives me...
Let's hope that is the narrative.
That gives me a story to fight for, because I think too many of folks are so apathetic right now. I'm hearing people that like, he's probably going to get reelected. If that's the sentence that comes out of your mouth, that should be a lightning bolt snap for you to get your ass involved.
Correct.
Paying attention to what's happening, talking to people. Then that means like, fuck, quit your job and go to a swing state. And there's so many things that we can do that we still have an opportunity where Russia doesn't take in control yet. We're still in a democracy. Get fucking involved.
Pick two Senate. I think they still in primary. I think they are, but pick two Senate races and give $5 a month.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Pick two.
That's such a wonderful
John Hickenlooper in Colorado, Sarah Gideon in Maine. Pick two.
Oh, who's the girl that? Who's the woman that's running against
Gideon,
Mitch?
Or maybe Sarah Gideon's in. No, that's McGrath.
Who's running against Mitch McConnell?
Amy McGrath.
Yes. Oh my God.
Pick two. Cool. Give them $5.
Absolutely. It's a way to get involved. It's not over. We're still in the middle of this.
Yes.
You know, and we did it in 2018. We can do it now. But it's going to take, like, if you want it, democracies are earned. And I think, yes, for the first time, our generation specifically is being asked to fight for it and stand up.
Agreed.
Ben Randall, thank you so much for coming on and helping us break this all down.
Happy to, always.
Well, that's the show. I know it's a lot to wrap your head around. Before we go, I do want to just fact check ourselves a little bit. We mentioned Bill Taylor, who testified, and we mentioned he worked in a few different administrations. To be specific, from 2006 to 2009, he was President George W. Bush and Barack Obama's ambassador to Ukraine. I also had mentioned that the senators had received information from the Intelligence Committee about that these lines were straight out of the Kremlin. I meant U.S. intelligence. The Intelligence Committee was the one serving on the hearings, and actually members of Congress, the House specifically, had not received this briefing. Senators have, but it's still weird that anybody is touting messages from the Kremlin and serving in Congress. It's weird. We mentioned the three amigos, but didn't go into details of who they were. It is Sondland, Volker, and Rick Perry, who is the Secretary of Energy, who, fun little story, Secretary of Energy Rick Perry was there at the Ukrainian president's inauguration the day that he was being sworn in to essentially introduce the Ukrainian president to Secretary of Energy Rick Perry's friends and energy of who the president of Ukraine should be doing business with. Shady as fuck. Also, Blow the Whistle was a song by Too Short. And that's the show. I hope you learned a lot. I hope you learned. I hope you laughed. I hope you played. You can contact us at Minority Corner through email at minoritycorner@gmail.com. You can also reach out to us through social media. We're on Facebook, the Corner Kids Playground. We're also on all the social media. Well, no, not all the social media, because we're not on Instagram. We're on Twitter. You can tweet at us, Instagram, coming soon. Also, if you're in the New York area, I'm doing a stand-up show at the Yes NYC Queer Comedy Competition that's going down on December 12th at 6:30 p.m. Call to make a reservation, like it's the 90s, at 212-726-2665. And tell them you're there to see your boy, James Arthur. It's going to be fun. I'm coming to slay, coming to snatch some crowns. I'd love to have you there in the audience, our lovely listeners. Well, that's it. Have a fabulous weekend. And thank you all for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Love ya.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.